welcome to the Hyphen Church Podcast, where faith meets the spaces in between. We're here to explore what it means to belong, to grow, and to encounter God in the midst of life's questions and complexities. Whether you're here to listen, reflect, or take a step forward, know that you're in the right place. Let's make space together for what God is doing in us and through us. Now, let's dive into today's message.
And we're going to be in Matthew 22. We're going to spend one more week in Matthew, then we're going to look 3 weeks at Luke, and then we're going to be into our Lent series called The Deep Work of God. I wish that God didn't do deep work, but he does. And we're going to unpack all of that during Lent. But for now, Matthew 22 is going to guide us in our last week. And Jesus is teaching, and he is approached by the Pharisees, because he had just been approached by the Sadducees, and they are different groups of the religious sectors there. And so he just does a kind of a public spanking of the Sadducees, and the Pharisees are like, well, we can get him. I know we can get him. We're smarter than those Sadducees, so here we go. When the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. And one of them, an expert in the law, asked him a question to test him. Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest? And he said to them, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the laws and the prophets. What is the greatest commandment? And Jesus could have said, I'll tell you the greatest commandment, obey everything to the letter of the law. That's what he could have said. That's what they wanted him to say. There are 613 commandments listed in the Old Testament. Pick your favorite child, Jesus. Pick your favorite commandment. Which is the most important commandment? And Jesus instead recites Deuteronomy 6, the Shema, that every Jewish person would have known from the very beginning. Love the Lord your God. Hear, O Israel. That's where the word Shema comes from. Listen. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God. The Lord your God is one. And love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. And other versions add all your strength as well. The religious experts testing Jesus, they wanted a hierarchy. They wanted a shortcut way. Here's a rule of thumb. If you get lost in the 613 laws, here's the one that I just want you to focus on. If you can't do all of them, just do this one. And Jesus doesn't say any of the laws. He says the Shema to them. Love the Lord your God. And Jesus refuses to meet them on their level. They want to test him. They want to throw him out. You're not a teacher of the law. You can't do that. Here's the question, though. If these two commands are the summary of all things, why do we organize our life around other things? If Jesus is teaching the disciples, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, those who are not believers, those who are on the outside looking in, those who are on the inside looking out, if he's teaching them that love is the commandment, love of God and love of people is the commandment, why do we organize ourselves around something else? Why is the measure of a church how many people walk through the doors? What is the greatest commandment, Jesus? The greatest commandment is fill your church with lots of people. That's the greatest commandment. He didn't say that, though. And yet, our modern church looks at that and says, the measure of your worth is how many followers you have. How much stuff you get done in a week. The greatest commandment is your efficiency. The greatest commandment is your ability to obey. The greatest commandment is how you do as a father or a mother or a son or a daughter. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Yeah, I guess we can do that. Maybe that one's too easy. Maybe we wanted more. Maybe there has to be more in our religion. Maybe there has to be more in Christianity that says, I have to do something more than that. This is the centerpiece of Jewish faith. And notice its inclusivity. All your heart, all your soul, all your mind. And it is a problem of this modern world, it is a problem of the ancient world, that we give God our leftovers. We come to God with our leftover time, we come to God with our leftover skill, we come to God with our leftover energy, we come to God with our leftover attention, we come to God with our leftover money. And so God doesn't get all of our heart, soul, and mind. He gets what's left over of our heart, soul, and mind. And we start to wonder why churches are disappearing. We're starting to wonder why people are walking away from Christianity. Well, just the Christianity of the church today. Because we're not asking people any longer to give all heart, soul, and mind to God. We're asking them to fit God, please, into your schedule. Can we schedule a time where we can love God with all our heart, soul, and mind? And then the rest of the time will be for our own pursuits, our own pursuit of happiness, perhaps. Our minds are fragmented, they're pulled in different directions. Notifications, multitasking, constant overstimulation in all things. I think the problem is we confuse activity for God with love for God. I think we'd rather look busy doing things for God than really look busy loving God. Why does love feel so central to faith and yet feels so hard to live out? We believe love is the point of faith. We sang it in Build My Life this morning. We admire loving people. Oh, I just feel so full of love whenever I'm with them. We aspire to be loving people, but we live as tired and rushed and fragmented and reactive. Our lives are arranged in ways that make love difficult. And maybe I'm just preaching to myself this morning. Maybe you have the secret sauce. Maybe you've figured out a way to arrange your week, to arrange your time in your life in ways that make love of others and love of God the priority. And if that's the case, I invite you up here to share your testimony with us this morning. But for the rest of us, what's happening is that we have set a priority on something else: survival, efficiency, productivity. All worthy, noble pursuits in life. I'm not going to condemn anyone because we've sought out productivity and efficiency. But you're not going to get a badge from Jesus either. Jesus is asked a religious question and he answers with a relational one. What is the greatest commandment? What is the most important part of our religion? What is the one thing that I can do to follow the law better? Oh, that's easy. Be in better relationship with one another. Be in better relationship with God. It wasn't to obey. It wasn't to sacrifice. It was love God and love your neighbor. This is often how we measure our ability in faith. We measure faith by our ability to stick it out or our ability to keep up. Well, I just got to have faith. I got to have faith. And Jesus says, you want to measure your faith? Measure it by how you love God and love neighbor. Measure it that way. It's not by your endurance through hardship. It's not through your ability to sing a song on a Sunday morning. It's by your ability to love. It's a measure of your love of God and other people. The greatest commandment isn't something to achieve, but something our lives must be paced to make possible. Love isn't an emotion. It's not something to be willed. It is volition. It is momentum. It is movement. It is commitment. It is orientation. It is action. It's about where you direct your whole self. What are you pushing yourself toward? What are you moving toward? What is the Spirit guiding your heart toward? You can't love God with all of anything when you're constantly distracted. Week one, we said, come to me and find rest. Jesus invited us into that relationship. And he said, here's a better way to do things. Here's a better person to walk with. Relationships, though, require presence and attention and focus. So that's the first command. Love God. The second one's love neighbor. And that one sometimes is a little bit easier for us because we can see it happening. We can't always see love God happening. And we can judge people too by love your neighbor, right? So that really makes it fun for people in the church to look at because we're really paying attention to love your neighbor. We don't pay very much attention to love God because we don't have a really good measuring stick for that, right? I don't really know how much you're loving God. I do know how much you're loving neighbor, though. And I can tell other people about that. And so that makes it one of the more fun commandments that God has given. To say, yeah, you're supposed to love your neighbor, and now you get to see how well your neighbors are doing at that. He says the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. This is from Leviticus 19:18. Notice as yourself, though, not of yourself. There's something clashing here with Jesus' philosophy with our modern world. We're taught that self-care is kind of a selfish thing. That love of oneself is selfishness. Or we swing to the other extreme, that self-care becomes self-obsession. Jesus does not say, love others instead of yourself. Jesus does not say, love others more than yourself. He says, love others as yourself. And so meanwhile, we're running on fumes. We're depleted and we're exhausted. And we wonder why our relationships are shallow with one another. Because we don't have anything to give. Can you genuinely love your neighbor if you don't love God? Can you love God if you don't love your neighbor? And how can you love your neighbor and love God if you don't love yourself? All of a sudden, there are three commands here now. To love God and love yourself and love neighbor. These aren't separate things. They're one command. They're all interconnected to one another. You can't pour from an empty cup. If we are empty and broken and fragmented and distressed, you can't give what you haven't received. Healthy love of self means stewarding the person God made you to be, and it requires rest, and it requires rhythm, and it requires boundaries. What are you saying yes to that you should have said no to? This is good love of self. to understand your limits as a person, to understand how far you can go. And why does as yourself matter to God? Why does Jesus include as yourself? Because a lot of times we treat ourselves as machines, right? We can push ourselves harder. We can go faster. We can ignore limits and boundaries that are naturally set up there. And then we wonder why we don't have patience with one another, why we have no margin, why we have no gentleness for others. Love your neighbor as yourself assumes that you know yourself. It assumes you care for yourself. It gives permission to slow down, not just for ourselves, but so we can love one another well. How you treat yourself is how you're going to treat your neighbor. I'm just going to say that again. Because I know I've never struggled with that, by the way. I'm just telling you guys that how you treat yourself is how you're going to treat your neighbor. Oh, yeah, I could fake it. Not for long. Let me know how that works in your life. Let me know if you can fake your love of neighbor by faking love of yourself. The way you treat yourself sets the pace for how you treat others. Faithful love of self receives God's love instead of having to prove worth. Faithfulness of self begins with letting God define your value. Oof, I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if that's easy for me to let go because I want to be in charge of my value. I want to determine my own worth. Unfaithful love of self says, I matter if I perform. I rest when I've earned it. I'm only as good as my last success. But faithful love of self says, I am loved before I achieve. I don't have to justify my existence. I belong to God, not to my productivity. To despise yourself is not humility. It's not selflessness. It's a disagreement with God's verdict of who you are and who to love. God loves me, but I don't love myself. God's wrong, right? Faithful love of self makes love sustainable. Here's a practical test for you. I know we don't like tests, especially in the morning, but here's a way to see how you love others. Are you resentful? Are you exhausted? Are you brittle? Are you anxious? Are you joyless? That's not faithfulness to other people. Faithful love of self receives grace first, rests in God, forgives itself, allows healing, so that love for others becomes patient and spacious and durable. We have the energy, we have the space to deal with others because we have love of self first. It's kind of like if you're going on an airplane and they teach you when those oxygen masks come down from the ceiling, you got to put yours on first. And if you don't put yours on first, you can't help other people put theirs on. See, love of God is like that oxygen mask. We have to receive it from its source first before we help others. A faithful love of self is not self-centered. It's God-centered. You cannot consistently give what you are unwilling to receive. And so this is crucial. Faithful love of self does not mean putting yourself first, indulging every desire, avoiding sacrifice, protecting comfort. It means seeing yourself as someone God loves, caring for the things God has loved, stewarding your body and soul, refusing to treat yourself as disposable. You are not the source of your worth. but you are responsible for how you live with it. That's not narcissism, to love yourself first. It's stewardship. It's understanding how God sees you as his child. Faithfulness is reflected in love of self when you receive God's love instead of proving your worth. You honor your limits instead of resenting them. You tell the truth instead of performing. You care for yourself so love can endure. I think I would say it this way, that faithful self-love is treating yourself the way that God already does. Faithful love of self is treating yourself the way God already does. Not thinking of yourself more or less than other people, but seeing yourself in the eyes of God. And that's why Jesus can say, love your neighbor as yourself, without ever teaching selflessness and selfishness. Because the self he assumes you will love is already a self loved by God. And then the horizontal can flow from the vertical. We have a love of God up and down, and we have a love of neighbor in that horizontal. When you're rested in God's love, you have love to give. God, love of God is the source, and love of neighbor is that expression. He says, though, that the second is like the first. He gives the first commandment, and then he says, here's the second one, and it's like the first. What does he mean by that? What does Jesus mean when he says the second is like the first? And how does that help us organize our lives around these things? He says all the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. It's not a hierarchy. It is a heartbeat. It is the tick and the tock of the clock. You cannot have one without the other. They are inseparable. They flow together. Love of God overflows into love of neighbor. And they both require the same thing, right? They require presence and time and attention and sacrifice. And the problem becomes is that in our modern life, we compartmentalize. We silo these things off. Well, there's my church time, and then there's my regular world time. And one of the things that we've been trying to do for the last almost 4 years at this church is to say, your secular life and your Jesus life are the same thing. That we don't separate them. That love of God and love of neighbor work the same Sunday to Saturday. We don't turn off love of God and love of neighbor on Sunday afternoon. This is our whole life. It's what our love hangs on. But we seem to prioritize tasks over relationships, and we measure success by what we accomplish, not how we love. And so we ask this question easily as a church: how do we love? How do you love? Are you measuring that? Because otherwise, we're not measuring the thing that Jesus is asking us to look at. Jesus isn't reducing these 613 laws to two. He's revealing the purpose behind every single one of them. And so sometimes we want to say, well, that's just the Old Testament. We have to unhitch ourselves from it. And that's fine. That is true sentiment. But what we actually want to do is go deeper and say, what Jesus isn't replacing those laws. He's showing their purpose. That if we're not following the commandments that Jesus has given us, that ultimately point us to God and point us to neighbor, then we've lost the point. If we're following commandments and we're following the laws and we're trying to keep ourselves holy and separated because we want to go to heaven, I think we've lost the thread there somewhere. That being a Christian and being in church and being in community and having a better pace and a better together with one another is not about getting to heaven first. It's about loving God and loving neighbor. Everything in Scripture points to love. And so what would happen in your life if you filtered every commitment through these two loves? And really these three loves, right? Does this help me love God better? Does this help me love people better? Does this help me love myself better? If the answer is no, why are you doing it? Why are you saying it? Why are you thinking it? Why are you spending time and energy on it if it doesn't get us to love God, love yourself, love your neighbor better? How can you build your life around love? We've spent 4 weeks talking about a better pace, a better relationship with Jesus, a better rhythm, a better connection, better together. That relationship leads to Sabbath, leads to prayer, leads to community, and we can't have community without love. And so a better pace for ourselves is a greater understanding of love and organizing our lives around it. What would it look like for you to organize your life around love? How does that happen? Well, the first thing you need to do is you need to audit your calendar. Does it reflect these two loves? The things that you've filled your calendar with in the weeks and the months and the years ahead, do they reflect those loves that we've talked about today? The second thing is identify one thing that you need to let go of to create margin in your life, to create a space for yourself. You can't love well. You can't love God if you can't be present with Him. You can't love neighbor if you are not present. You can't love yourself if you are not present. And so building margin into your day, building those moments where you just need to stop and say, I don't have anything to do right now, and that's good because I can be present with God and I can be present with others. Thirdly, identify one relationship that needs more time, more relationship that needs more presence. Everyone has them in their lives. Again, if you do, I invite you to share your testimony with us. But your relationships, there's someone in your life that's coming into your mind now. And if you don't have someone that you're thinking of, ask the Spirit. Say, in what relationship do I need to be more present? And it might be some of your neighbors. It might be someone in your family. It might be yourself. The Spirit is saying, slow down. You need to spend more time here healing and listening. It might be with God. There is a relationship that needs more time and more presence. Build your life, build your week, build your day around creating more presence. There's one area of all of this that we didn't talk about, and that's the fourth thing, is practice loving God with your mind. Heart and soul, we get, that's the innards here, but loving God with our mind. What does focused, unhurried, undistracted time look like with God? How can we love God with our mind? How can we focus and unhurry and not want to get by that? How can we give God all of those things without rushing past them? You can't do this in your own strength, by the way. This is the invitation to you. You can't do this. That's the whole point. is that we can't rely on our own value and our own strength. It requires coming back to Jesus again and again. It's finding that rest and rhythm and connection, and it's making space for one another. What would it look like to move at the speed of love this week? Not the speed of your ambition, not the speed of your anxiety, not the speed of cultural expectations, but the speed of love. Slow enough to see God, slow enough to see your neighbors, and slow enough to see you as God sees you. A better pace isn't about doing less so you can be lazy. It's about slowing down so you can love well, because love is the point of everything. When you have an arch, a bridge, a stone arch, that piece that sits in the center, that keystone, it holds the whole thing together. If you remove that, it's gone. The arch collapses. That one stone holds everything in place. We call Jesus the cornerstone because it's how we build up. It's how we build our life on that foundation. But the thing at the top, the thing that holds our life and God together, is love. It's the keystone.